When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, here we are.
Back from holiday.
But I like really enjoy getting settled back into my own home and my own routine, which doesn't really bring you any joy.
I just get sad that my real life isn't like holiday life.
I think this will divide along the lines of depressives and non-depressives.
Don't you think my personality is better on holiday, though?
This is not an exaggeration. It's as though you've taken a pill. It's like you've disappeared into another person. But it's disturbing.
I don't understand why you don't just prefer my holiday personality, though. I mean,
I 100% prefer it. It's wonderful, but you're sat there going, I should have this shit 11 and a half months out of the year instead of a half a month out of the year.
The answer is more holidays.
Oh my gosh, do you think this is a good moment to plug the Patreon? Listen, if everyone who listens gave us £3 a month, we could take an extra holiday in the year. What I want you to understand is I'm this lady and my husband's moodiness just when he's on a holiday. And I think we all know that I deserve that an additional week. I'm saying to you people, if you all join together, what are you going to do? Give that fucking money to like some hungry child? No. You're going to give it to me because it makes my husband nicer.
We should say who our guest is. And it's something that was very much on our minds on holiday.
So, Jim Field Smith, see what my body is doing right now? It's really reacting in an excited way, is only the co-creator and director of Hijack.
Our first quick watch is one that we watched together.
We watched it in the morning, like filthy fuckers.
So I've got no problem with watching TV during the day, whereas you feel dirty when you do
it. I have been raised to believe that TV in the daytime is what you do if you're a fucking filthy slut.
So the show in question is Painkiller on Netflix. It's about the opioid crisis in the United States, and it stars Matthew Broderick. Now, I have to say, don't understand, by and large, when people watch a show because of the actor. Look at any actor, even the best actors, look at their CVs and there are stinkers in there. But I do just feel warmly towards Matthew Broderick because of Ferris Bueller.
Oh my gosh. And I feel warmly toward him because at my first ever restaurant job in New York, I was a coat check girl and I managed to fuck up the coat check. So stressful, so terrible. And so Matthew Broderick was in the restaurant with Sarah Jessica. And I remember knowing that he felt bad for me. He was clearly sat there being like, oh, this poor like teenage girl in this fancy restaurant who's like fucked up. And that is such a high level of empathy.
So do you think we would have even pressed play on this show if it hadn't been for the fact that Matthew Broderick's in it?
Let me be very real with everybody. My magic words, opioid crisis. And I got no idea why.
What is it you're drawn to?
I, Jeff, I don't know. I don't like watching people suffer. I don't like watching lives be ruined.
Is it doctors prescribing? Is it reps from drug companies? Is it Big Pharma? You like Big Pharma?
I think I might like Big Pharma. And if I see a podcast, it's like the opioid crisis. I'm like, yep. Like, I always want opioid crisis. And I don't know. I think part of it is I feel... It's like, there's something satisfying to me about seeing doctors be naughty boys.
And these... I don't, but do you think Naughty Boys understates it?
Oh, yes.
It's also interesting that you you gender doctors as men.
I know. That's my mom's fault. I don't want to say that first. Let me just get that out there.
But you don't like watching grimy addiction. You don't want to see someone on a piss-stained mattress injecting heroin.
No. But clean Hollywood does opioids? Oh, my God.
And I have to say, it's not very good. And I feel bad saying that because each episode starts with a real-life family member of somebody who lost their lives because of an opioid addiction introducing the episode.
And it felt like it was the TV makers going, oh, if we just put these people in, then we're, like, totally fine.
No one's going to say anything bad about it.
Yeah, no one's going to say anything bad about it. It's like, don't worry that we're using, like, a story but making it sort of, like, entertaining for Hollywood. It's like, it was simultaneously, I thought, not constantly, but at many points, eye-rollingly bad. But I couldn't stop watching it. So it's not a piece of shit. So if you're like me, and someone says opioid crisis, and you go, yes, please, but only if it's not too dark. This is the show for you. Our second quick watch, we double quick watch this week together as a couple while fucking on the couch in the morning. Can you imagine? So last week when we spoke to Jack Thorne, and Jack was like, just watch Chrissy's episode from Boys from the Black Stuff. So I thought, you know what I should do? I'll watch this one episode. So you then, I said, I think I'm gonna watch that thing that Jack said to watch. And you were like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. And I was like, well, you can watch it with me. Like, we can do it together.
Because it's some of my favorite TV of all time.
This is very interesting. You say that, but I've never heard you mention it.
I don't think of you as, oh, my wife who likes a bit of gritty social realism during the Thatcher years in the north of England. I've learned over the years to keep my mouth shut about that
fine.
Stuff.
Anyway, I decided that I should watch this thing. It was one episode that made it feel so doable to me.
And we got to fire up BritBox, which we don't do very often.
Fired up the old BritBox.
That makes me feel dirty. Never mind watching TV during the day. Just Brit opening BritBox.
Open up your BritBox.
It sounds like Nigel Farage's masturbation fantasy.
Here are my two big things that I feel need to be said. Mm-hmm. There was some of it that had to do with strikes and minors. And
I don't think there were no minors in it.
Boys from the Black Stuff. I thought there was supposed to be miners.
No, they lay the tarmac on the roads.
Oh, shit.
That's the black stuff. Oh, the black stuff. There are no mines.
I was like, they're talking about black stuff, so I assume someone's going into a mine and, like, he's going to die. Okay, so I wasn't... Okay, so anything that had to do with laying the black stuff was, like, so far over my head. I was so confused. And not in the thing where I couldn't understand the British accents. I understand British accents, but there'd be different points where I just have to pause and say to Jeff, like, no clue what's happening here. And he would say, oh, it's this, it's this. There was this marital dynamic that was sort of the center of it.
So the series, for anyone who doesn't remember it, each episode focuses on a different member of this crew.
And Chrissy is a man who is one of those crew who has been laid off. So his marriage is very much at the center of his episode.
And his wife
is Julie Walters in the 80s, looking fucking hot. That is like my dream body and aesthetic. There was a way that these ladies dressed in the 80s, like they were just doing things with like jumpers and jeans, just a simple jumper and jeans. Oh, she looks fabulous. And like with that big old hair that's like a halo, so great. Anyway, the way that their dialogue is written, and I've thought about this statement, it's not an overstatement. The way that that dialogue is written is as good as most of the writing in Succession.
It's brilliant.
It's at that level. Like, it's some of those Tom and Shiv scenes where you're like, this shit is insane.
Or like Ingmar Bergman's scenes from A Marriage.
Yes. These three things belong together. Scenes from A Marriage, Tom and Shiv, and Chrissy and whatever his wife's name is. I don't remember anymore. So that shit, you were watching it and going, this is nuts, unbelievable. And I see why it's amazing. And I get it. Oh my gosh. I got it. But bottom line, I'm a modern lady. I'm an American girl. I'm a hot young thing. Okay. It was too slow. It looked too 1980s, but not 1980s like I'm fucking used to.
Because I should say that Sarah is from the suburb of Chicago, where all those 80s films like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and The Breakfast Club and Home Alone and all that stuff was set. That is what the 80s looks like to you, not a terraced house in Liverpool ravaged by unemployment.
No, thank you.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How old do you think you were the first time you interacted with a working class person who wasn't serving you in some way?
Working class, our next door neighbors, the Morninis, were working class. Because for all my yammering on about how fucking rich I grew up, I didn't really. So we were in like one of the not nicer streets.
Yeah, no, you're from the wrong side of the tracks with your psychotherapist mom and your book editor father.
You can make fun of me, but you've been to my town. And that is, by the standards of the town that I grew up, I did literally grow up on the wrong side of the tracks.
To be fair, you could only get probably only three cars on the driveway of your parents' house.
But we never had three cars. We had
just the two. So actually, watching Boys from the Back stuff, it was familiar to you then?
No, I'm not saying that, but I was just trying to answer your question in an
okay,
honest way.
Okay. Now, Sarah would like to say a word about,
just a quick word about,
just like that.
This is so quick. This is the quickest of the quicks, just real fast. Okay. I know mostly no one is watching, no one who's in our world. So I don't understand how alone I am or I'm not. I really need to speak with someone about this. In a recent episode, so I just watched, I think it was episodes 8 and 9 together because I just got back from holiday. One of the plot lines was Charlotte is going back to work at a gallery, and she's just a little bit bigger than she's ever been before because she's going through menopause. So she puts on all these Spanx. It's a whole plot line. She gets to the gallery, and then a large woman enters who is jolly. My understanding is we need to stop with jolly large women. It's just, it's not a helpful stereotype. It's very clear to us, the viewer, that she embraces her body. And they walk up the stairs together, and then it cuts to Charlotte in the bathroom, taking off all the Spanx. And I was like, hold on. I'm real sorry. Are we watching a scene where because a fat woman doesn't hate herself, Charlotte is going to be allowed to love her quote unquote much better body? I think it was like maybe the most problematic thing that's ever happened on the show to date. I don't know, maybe like all the unbelievable kind of cringe race stuff that they were doing in the beginning of the first season, maybe I forgot. I don't know what the race stuff felt like. Was we're trying to correct a problem, whereas this felt like fat phobia, fat stereotypes presented as embracing a body positivity moment.
Right.
Did everyone else feel like they were dying? And I felt fucking like so baited and switched because I was so into the storyline otherwise. And then it was like, oh no, you're going to do your worst moment. I was just starting to be like, okay, I'm all right, bitches, I'm back. And then you fucking did this shit. Anyway, the finale is coming up. My life will be empty without it.
We'd love to hear from you. The email address is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
I want to know, how normal is this to be watching something obsessively at the same time as knowing it's terrible?
I think that must be kind of common.
Also, I'd be interested to hear if you are somebody who watches something because of an actor. What is it that you just like looking at their face? Also, are you like Sarah? Will you watch something just because it's in a particular genre, like you in the opioid crisis?
Oh, the opioid crisis.
My friend Malik will watch anything set on a submarine.
Fucking submarines, though, right? Oy vey. One of my oldest friends, her boyfriend, now her husband, I don't know why I said her boyfriend, it's been like her husband for 25 years, used to just go off. He worked in the military for a while, and he would have to go off on submarines, and he couldn't tell her. And so I would like go to see her, and he would, it would be like her boyfriend was underwater in unlocatable. Isn't that crazy? I haven't thought about that in so long. That I would not cope. I look on your Find My iPhone, I mean, constantly. Imagine if you were just under, I couldn't live. I would have to medicate the entire time.
So yeah, is there a genre that you will always watch? And of course, your recommendations and your thoughts on our thoughts on things that we've watched and recommended at the email address.
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
As we mentioned, coming up later, we are talking to co-creator and director of Hijack on Apple TV Plus, Jim Field Smith.
So do you think his mom is Field and his dad was Smith? Like, what do you think his kids are named?
I don't know. I've got
what
a problem.
What do these people with their hyphenates do? Where does it go?
Yeah, I know. You can't keep hyphenating, can you?
You can't keep hyphenating. That's all I'll say.
And as we said about Hijack last week, you might have heard it mentioned and thought, nah, it's not for me. But it's really good.
It is the next amazing thing in your life. You're a duty pants if you don't start watching it. I'm not going to convince anyone. They don't fucking need it. You're stupid if you don't give yourself this gift. I'm such a good saleswoman, but I really mean it.
Well, since you're such a good saleswoman, why don't you tell everyone about Patreon?
I've been waiting for this my whole life. Listen to me. Our Patreon, we are up and fucking moving. I've sent my first voice note. If you are giving us £5 or more, you're getting a voice note from me every month. So if you have signed up to that Patreon.
Every week.
Every week, motherfucker. It's Fridays with Fryer Crotch, bitches. Sometime between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m., I'm just going to send you on your mobile phone a little voice note from me to you. So you should really sign up for the Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/theyliketowatch. Go on. Is it a forward slash?
Yes.
It's the same shit.
I think just say slash or stroke.
Stroke sounds like when you're doing your dicky.
Slash sounds like a piss.
Oh, or, only to British worse. People. Only to British people.
Like something you do with a knife.
Stroke. They like to watch. Give us your money so that I, a lovely lady in the north of London, can have 2 holidays a year so that Jeff can be in his holiday mode. Which just makes my life a little bit brighter. Mm. I'm in the second half of my life, presumably, now, and I'm just trying to like live a happier life. And happy husband, happy life. You know, that's the shit that no one says, but that's what's true.
Is this part of you being an excellent salesperson?
No, I'm just trying. Yes, actually, it is, because I'm being honest about myself.
Patreon.com/theyliketowatch. All right, we've decided to get on board with the third series of Only Murders in the Building. We watched the first season, and I think we really enjoyed it. It's a fun show, but it did feel a bit like they told that story really well across that first season, and for me anyway, it felt like it fell off a cliff a little bit. All of a sudden it went from being this unlikely friendship in this apartment building in New York with some people who decide to make a podcast about a murder to being all this like secret tunnels and long lost daughters, and I just didn't enjoy the second series very much.
No, but we thought everyone is now talking about season 3, so let's give it a go.
The great thing about this show is it's somewhere you want to be. It's set in what I think is like our retirement fantasy.
Yeah, like it's where I could move and want to live and die.
Which is an apartment building in New York, but a high-end one.
But it's not even just high-end,
it's that it's full
right?
of characters, it's full of New York life.
So I think it's based on this real building, which is the Apthorpe, which I know about because Nora Ephron wrote about it in this essay in like the mid-noughties. I'm a reader. It's not a big deal. And so it's a city block. So I think it's like 12 stories high and it's as long as a city block on the Upper West Side. And it is just the ultimate New York fantasy.
And the show really plays on that. The opening titles are fantastic, but they look like a New Yorker cover.
Oh.
And the music is so atmospheric.
I was just going to say atmospheric. It's very atmospheric.
I don't know that we would do too well in a building like that. Imagine having to speak to a doorman every time you went in.
No, I think...
Well, you would be fine because you can keep those interactions short. But I would feel the need to try and get some small talk going out of politeness.
What do you think your go-to topics would be?
Well, this is it. This is my life. Like, I'll go to the shop across the road. And I've got nothing to say.
I've been doing very well with my small talk at the shop, but only since the new edition, and you know who I'm talking about.
There's a young man who's working there now.
Okay, so the other night my friend was over. So I say to her, I will pay for the wine, but I'm not getting off my sofa. You go buy the wine with my money. She goes across the street, she buys the wine, she comes back. She goes, the guy who works across the road is very eccentric. I go, was he younger? She goes, yeah. And she said that she bought the bottle of wine and she's very pretty. And he said to her, one girl, big night, no good. So that became the theme of the night. One girl, big night, no good. Anyway, he and I do very well. I think I could do great with a doorman. I think it would be worth it to get to live in that apartment.
And what about being in the lift with other residents?
Picture being in the lift is like walking up and down the road. You don't get into it with people.
But there's a brevity of interaction when you're passing somebody on the street that when you're confined in a space for 30 seconds, you're not afforded that luxury.
I'm in this headspace right now where like I'm sort of half incredibly annoyed with you for being able to find a bad thing about a beautiful fantasy. But then on the other hand, I feel kind of grateful because I think you're kind of making some good points.
So just on the off chance, you don't know anything about this show. Steve Martin is one of the co-creators and one of the three leads, the other two being Selena Gomez and Martin Short, who I adore. I think Martin Short is one of these people who is about as famous as you can be without being Tom Cruise in America. But over here, I don't know that people know his name so much. They might know him from Three Amigos or Father of the Bride, whereas in the States, he's very well known.
Yeah, so he's probably not as famous as Steve Martin, but almost. Like, I think of them as...
Yeah, and that's not the case here at all.
Oh, my... He is... This is his deal. Ready? He can't be bad. I have never seen Martin Short be anything other than amazing.
Do you remember Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary called Comedian about 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite films.
On the extras to the DVD, he was interviewed by Martin Short, is this character he used to do called Jiminy Glick. And it was just some of the funniest stuff I'd ever seen.
There's been a lot of talk about how Selena Gomez is a revelation in this role.
Mm.
I don't agree with that statement. I think her flavor is unique. And I think what is kind of amazing is that you'd have to be the third leg of the table alongside Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Because they've done loads of stuff together. They tour together.
They do a whole thing. They're in Father of the Bride together, which everyone should watch Father of the Bride. It's such a piece of shit film, but they're so funny together in it. And of course, it has Kieran Culkin when he's like 5 years old. It's a much watch for everyone. Anyway, I can't quite get on board with the idea that Selena Gomez is a revelation. I think she's good considering she's a pop star and good considering she's like among comedy royalty.
And there are some incredible guest stars as well. There is Meryl Streep, who people will know from Mamma Mia, and Paul Rudd, who is so funny in it.
I know. I mean, I'm a big Paul Rudd fan.
But if you're going to watch the first episode, look out for this and see if you agree with me. I feel like he has been watching the Netflix sketch show, I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, because there is a scene in that episode where I feel like he's just straight up doing an impersonation of him. And it's really funny, but it's that guy's note completely.
Do you want to explain the character he plays in this season?
Yes. So we move into the world of theatre.
I think my two favourite places to be, like in a television setting, are Rich Person, Opioid Crisis, or Broadway. I think like those are my two happy places.
So Paul Rudd is playing a Hollywood star who is appearing in a Broadway play. We try and avoid spoilers, but something I want to mention is Paul Rudd's character has a stalker. Mm-hmm. We see inside the stalker's apartment and he has a pair of this actor's pants.
Underpants, you mean?
Yes. In like a Ziploc bag, a plastic bag.
Yeah.
And that reminded me.
Oh, God.
I once went to the house of a journalist called Hunter Davis, who wrote the authorized Beatles biography, which came out in 1968. And he opened a filing cabinet and pulled out an almost identical looking plastic bag in which were a pair of swimming trunks. And Paul McCartney had been to visit him on holiday in Portugal and had left his swimming trunks behind. And instead of sending them back, he kept them in a plastic bag and he now has them in a filing cabinet in his front room.
That is so insane. Did he seem a little creepy already or did he become creepy after having heard that detail?
It wasn't that he seemed creepy. It's that he seemed like this crazy archivist, like a hoarder almost.
Right. So it wasn't
that it was something that had been touching a Beatles scrotal area.
I don't think I've ever been surprised by a hoarder. You know, you never like, oh, you didn't seem like the type to save someone's underpanties.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question.
Yes.
Is it okay for us to be talking about Selena Gomez's face?
I think it's probably not. I think the world's probably moved on a bit from that.
Ideal. Can I talk about what I would do for myself personally, if I were to do some certain things for my
face. So this is about the fact that Selena Gomez has had some surgery, and that's got you thinking about what you might do if you had Selena Gomez's means.
Let's leave her out of it. Yeah, let's discuss her means.
Yes.
If I had her means, I would just spend it differently.
Go on.
First, under eyes, then tummy tuck, then bingo wings. Now, fourth edition, I think I do a little gobble gobble removal.
Oh, Sarah.
Do we hate ourselves or what?
I hate myself, but I don't have a plastic surgery list.
Well, I just think you should start with doing shoulder rolls, and that would help your posture. And I genuinely think that's all you need is postural help. Like, I don't want you developing one of those humps. I'm not hump shaming anyone who has one. I think your hump probably looks great on you, but I don't want one for my husband. Sorry.
Anyway, to summarize, I'm feeling optimistic about series three. These first two episodes I thought were really good, and I think it's a real return to form.
There you go.
Let us know what you think. Do you completely disagree? Do you think series two was the best season of Only Murders in the Building?
Do you feel that Selena Gomez is actually amazing?
Also, any other examples of lulls in shows where you might otherwise give up on it, but oh no, you stick with it because series five, that's when it gets really good.
Do you want to give your controversial opinion that you have on this, where you really like being different to everyone else?
What is it?
The Wire. So everyone sort of says like that The Docks is the slow season, and you love to go, The Docks was my favorite season.
Well, I love anything with Dockers. It's back to Boys from the Black stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dockers, tarmacers, navvies, labourers, teamsters, stevedores, trade unions, shop stewards. I love out like that, me.
Boring. Give me Broadway and opioids.
The email address.
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And coming up next, we were so delighted to get to speak to him because this show is such a phenomenon. And we're so grateful that he found the time to talk to us.
Do you think he's very rich?
Yeah. Not like an oligarch.
No, but like with a show like Hijack, when it goes this well, how rich does that make someone?
I think this show has done well. He had this show Criminal, which had various iterations. He's done a bunch of commercials. I think he's directed some films. I think, you know, that hierarchy of needs.
His needs are met.
Yeah, he's past that first level.
Shit.
Yeah.
Fucking hot.
Yeah. That's all I want to be. I just want to be past that first level.
We just want to never worry about money again. Is that a problem for you? No. Join our Patreon. Thanks.
And Jim Field-Smith coming up next to talk about Hijack.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Have you heard from anyone telling you that you've sort of like ignited a fear of flying in them?
I haven't heard from anyone who said that it's ignited a fear of flying, but certainly there are people that are anxious of flying already that have said they're not sure whether they're going to watch it or not. But then equally, I've heard from people who've said, oh, I've saved up all seven episodes to watch because I've got to get on a long flight tomorrow.
What goes on with this with people? That sounds a little critical, which I think is probably how I mean it. But what do you make of people who want to watch stuff about scary shit that happens on an airplane while they're on an airplane?
Isn't that just the purest form of why people might like the show in the first place, I suppose, in that it taps into a kind of primal fear? So I suppose you're getting the 3D version, aren't you, if you watch it on a plane?
But what about the person sitting next to you?
I don't think it'll be many airlines' choice of in-flight entertainment.
We were on a plane yesterday on the way back from holiday, and we were looking at all the other passengers trying to suss out which ones might be hijackers and which ones look like they might be have a go heroes as well.
Yeah, that's kind of how it all began, really, in that George, my business wife, was on a Eurostar, which became stuck in the tunnel for a considerable amount of time. And in that window, he was looking around at everyone in his carriage thinking, I wonder what that person would do. If this goes on for another hour, I wonder if that person over there is going to crack or if that person... So that was kind of the initial seed of the whole thing.
What do you think you would do?
I'd probably just go and sit as close to Idris Elba as possible if he was on the plane.
Same. Idris Elba ever given you like a full body embrace?
Yeah. Although it's a bit like, however tall you are, you feel small next to Idris, and he kind of wraps you up and picks you off the ground like a toddler.
Does he, swear to God, we're not going to make this entirely about Idris Elba, but I've got to get my questions in. Does he smell very wonderful?
Somebody once told me that they knew Idris Elba was in a room with them before they saw him, because they could smell him.
And isn't it, you just know that that's not bad. You know that's a good aroma that he's
getting. Yeah, no, it's not, it wasn't a sort of pungent. It wasn't like tracking an animal downwind, you know, it was a pleasant experience.
Can I tell you what I've been saying to people to convince them to watch this show? Because it's what somebody said to me, and I can't make sense of it, so maybe you can help me make sense of it. What I've been saying to people is, you've got to watch this show, it's on Apple TV, it's called Hijack, it stars Idris Elba, but it's so much better than you think it's going to be. Why am I feeling the need to explain it in those terms?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, it's a high concept idea. If I was being harsh on ourselves, I would say it's kind of a B-movie conceit. What we were trying to do was something different with it. We didn't want it to be purely about the plot and about violence and about taking over an airliner. And what we didn't want to do was have a protagonist who was kind of a former special forces operative or has some kind of magical skill. So I suppose that was one of the big subversions for us, was like, it's not just a, I'm going to start killing these guys one by one. It was, I'm going to get under the skin of these people and bring them down that way. I think the secondary subversion, which sort of speaks to what you said, is the Idris thing, right? So because it's Idris, certainly in the first episode, you're expecting there's going to be this moment where he kind of kicks into action or, you know, reveals that he's a cop or whatever. And we had fun with that because we knew that would be people's expectations coming into it. And then the third subversion, I suppose, was in the nature of the hijacking itself, i.e. who the hijackers are and what they're after.
Watching this show, it was one of these things where if Jeff started talking during the show, I'd be like, I missed a word. And one of the things he kept interrupting with was ranking the likability of the hijackers.
That's so lovely to hear, actually, because we wanted to show that actually they were people too. Who was your favorite?
This is his dream question, by the way. We've designed this interview so you would ask him that, basically.
I thought the head hijacker, Neil Maskell's character, I thought, oh, he is the likable one. He's a grown up. He lives in a difficult and violent world, but he's a reasonable man. But then when he started all that say cheese business, I thought, I'm not sure about you anymore.
Yeah.
And then when you find out it's his brother, you understand their family situation. I mean, I really went on a journey with him.
You hated the woman because of hatred of women generally.
I made a point of not hating, you know, I think instinctively.
He hated the woman,
I hated
but he
her
wouldn't
the most,
say,
but I didn't
hate
want to be a misogynist.
Right, you hated her in spite of the fact that she was a woman.
I hated her in a feminist way. Sarah developed a very intense crush on the air traffic controller in Dubai.
He was one of the nicest looking people I've seen on screen in quite some time. But with someone like that actor, my understanding is he's into his business and his yoga and he acts as well. Like, how do these people get found?
We have an amazing casting director, Amy Hubbard. And one thing genuinely we really wanted to do, it wasn't always possible, But one thing we wanted to do was make sure all of the non-British roles in the show were cast authentically. Now, there's not a huge acting community in Dubai, and we wanted that character specifically to be a genuine Emirati man. And we were, I suppose, really lucky to find Mohammed, who plays that character.
I've never been interested in Dubai because I've only ever heard it described as like the Vegas of the Middle East, which does not appeal to me. But his face alone made me think, Dubai, we should we go?
You know we're married, right?
Yeah.
I was just going to ask on that casting. So when a casting director has found people and then you're in a room doing auditions, how conscious of their feelings are you? Is that one of your strengths? Are you particularly sympathetic, or are they like pieces of meat to you?
I suppose I'm quite lucky in that I started out in comedy and started out acting. And so I'm able to kind of empathize with people and I suppose put them at ease as best I can. And what I always say to actors is, you can't fuck up an audition. The only way you can fuck up an audition is just by not being yourself, because you're not going to not get the job because of something you did or didn't do. You're either right for it or you're not, and that's completely out of your control.
Because of your own acting background, you find it very difficult to not just say to people, like, say it like this. Like, do you want to give Idris Elba a line reading? I think that's my question. Has there ever been a moment where you'd be like, I gotta just show this guy how to do this job?
I suppose part of the skill set is like having the patience to allow the person to arrive at the thing that you always knew you wanted. And to not go, fucking say it this way. It's so obvious how it's supposed to be said.
Like, was Idris already signed up, or was he somebody that Apple had on a deal and they matched him with the project, or did you have to pitch it to him?
Sort of a mix of all those things. George had mentioned the idea to Apple when it really was just an idea. It was nothing on the page at all. And Apple kind of jumped at it. And as George started to write it, this kind of matchmaking thing happened where it was like, we've got this deal with Idris and we think this could be a really perfect fit for him. And so as George was writing it, he started writing it for Idris. And then it was just one of those perfect marriages where Idris read it and was like, I love this. And
so where does the first meeting happen then?
I actually can't remember.
You remember the smell?
A lot of phone calls.
You remember being lifted?
Yeah, I remember the smell. Yeah. It's okay. A sort of Proustian, sort of Pavlovian response. I remember we did a big meeting one day and George just walked through every single episode with Idris kind of sitting in the middle of the room and everyone doing that thing where they were trying not to look to see what Idris was thinking about everything. But George was really, really sick. And he only just got through it, and then he just kind of flumped down in a chair. He literally finished episode 7 and then just fell into his chair. It's a really, really labor-intensive show from a writing point of view, because things have to be happening all the time. And in a regular drama, I think, I'm sure you're aware of this thing of like, oh, you know, you've got to watch this drama. It takes 3 or 4 episodes to get going. And we couldn't have that. In a real-time show, you just have to be straight in. And then once you've started, you can't like let up at any point.
I was in as soon as there was squabbling about the overhead bins for putting luggage in, and as soon as the vicar's trying to bribe the cabin crew to change seats.
Jim, I have to tell you as well, because as we said, we flew yesterday. And listen, I don't know what you're planning for a sequel, but I'm going to pitch you on some shit that happened on this flight that we took last night, okay? A couple is walking down the aisle. They decide to ask a woman already seated to switch seats with them so that they can sit together, right? Okay. But they're asking a woman on the aisle to switch into a middle seat. Do you see it as Hijack Season 2?
It may not have enough conflict.
Okay.
That'd be my main note.
All I'm saying is that I'm pitching you a story that's about people. Do with it what you want. I don't expect a cut, but I would like a credit in the thanks that come at the
like
end
it.
Of something.
Okay, I like it. Right. I like it.
Okay, thanks.
On the sequel, though, I mean, presumably when you go to Apple with an idea like this, they're asking about multi-season. I can't wrap my head around how you can do a sequel with it still being called Hijack. I think you've taken us into a world of organized crime that Sam Idris Elba's character has become embroiled with. But, I mean, they're not going to hijack the Eurostar, are they?
Well, we just pitched it as a limited series, a one-off idea. And everything we did in the way that we set it up and in the way that we wrapped up the story was designed to be a limited series. Now, clearly the show's been successful and that's been amazing for us. Like, it's been more successful than we hoped. And I think certainly, you know, there are loose ends in there, as you've alluded to. And I think there's a lot more gas in the tank for that character, for sure.
But then does the title become an albatross around your neck?
No, I don't think so. I mean, here's the thing. George and I made a show called Criminal for Netflix, which is entirely set in the interview rooms of a police station. And one of our early jokes about Hijack was that it was basically just Criminal with wings, in that it was, let's take a really constrained setting and let's wring every last drop of possibility out of that setting. And the show was constructed in such a way as like, oh, we're going to want to go to the ground. And of course, you do want to go to those storylines. But in reality, in the cut, I was actually not wanting to cut away from the plane. I was wanting to stay on the plane as much as possible.
Yes, and it wasn't...
And there's material on the ground that we removed massively.
Yeah. And it wasn't claustrophobic. That was the strange thing to me. I mean, it would be very easy, I think, for a plane to feel too confined. And you got around that very well, I thought.
Thanks. Yeah, that was definitely right at the front of our minds as we started to make it. It was like, how do we make the space and the camera work? But that plane is a scale replica of what it is. It's like very, very little cheating in there at all. It's a real plane, essentially, that we built. And the trick we pull in the show a lot is we travel with a character through the plane, and you really just constantly reminding the audience there are 200 people in this space, you know? So that was just something we worked really hard on, was keeping it intense, but not feeling like it was overbearing. In terms of doing more of it, I'm a sucker for punishment. So I would always say, you can't break the conceit of it. And the moment you go, oh, do you know what? It's Idris Elba. The character of Sam Nelson's really interesting. What if we saw Sam Nelson, I don't know, like in a situation that isn't a hijacking? I sort of think, well, that's just a different show. And maybe that's a good show too, but that's not our show.
What about a cruise ship? Hijacking a cruise ship. Sam takes a nice, relaxing cruise after everything he's been through.
You think filming on a plane is problematic? Filming at sea is probably the worst thing I've ever done.
Are there people that do Sam Nelson's job? Is that a real job?
Yeah, he's a corporate negotiator. George and I actually know people who do very similar jobs. It's obviously slightly dialed up for the show, but like, he is a real thing. It's all about, as Sam says in episode 7, it's all about getting other people to sort of think like you think, or getting other people to believe that they want the same thing. And I suppose what he learns in the show is that that is a bit of a trick, and it only gets you so far.
But you, I mean,
but yeah, it's a real job.
But you're someone who's worked in the entertainment business for a long time. You've had dealings with many, many agents, I'm sure. How common is it to have that kind of emotional and psychologically just spat his tea out as I asked the question? How common is it to have that kind of emotional intelligence and psychological awareness rather than just going in like a bulldozer?
You know, I try and be sort of honest and open in all of my business dealings. There are also people who try and be very much like Sam and be in the kind of gamesmanship world of, if I say the opposite of what I want and make them come round to the decision on their own, then they'll make it think like it's their idea.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question that Sarah's begged me not to ask you. But I hope we've established that we adored this show and couldn't get enough of it. I had but one problem. It was, you had Max Beasley, who people will know from the Brand New Heavies. One minute he's in the countryside, one minute he's in central London. I mean, what is he teleporting? This is where I feel the real time went out the window a little bit.
It's actually pretty closely timed. I'm actually proud to say it is. I think if you actually broke apart the episode and you sat there and you did the actual timings, you would find, yes, it's probably not possible to be in and around sort of Aylesbury/Watford, which is where when you say he's in the countryside, that's where he is. You can get from Aylesbury to central London on Blues and Twos in like 25 minutes, 30 minutes in a high-powered BMW, which is what he's driving. And yes, of course, it's compressed slightly, but not as much as you might have felt watching it. And I had a few people say that, like, oh, how does this character get from there to there? And it's like, well, he's doing like 90 miles an hour down the A40. If you're in a police car with Blues and Twos on, you can get from Aylesbury to central London in about half an hour, 40 minutes.
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to it with a stopwatch and Google Maps, and then we can pick up this conversation another time.
What I will say also is that there's been a lot of comparisons with 24, which I was a big fan of when it came out. But when the first series of that came out, a lot of the criticism was around, oh, really? He's 24. When do you don't see Jack Bauer take a shit or eat a meal? And it's like, do you want to see that happen? Like, why do you want to see that happen? That's a weird thing to ask for in a drama.
Before we let you go, just a couple of quick questions. What is the piece of TV that made you start wanting to work in it yourself?
Creature Comforts, you know, the Aardman animation series. And I think the reason you love stuff like that is the characters. For me, the difference between TV and films is that TV is characters and film is story. And I've worked in both and I love both sort of mediums equally. But the reason I think I've enjoyed TV more over the last sort of 10 years of my career is that I enjoy establishing a character, letting the audience kind of fall in love with that character and then putting that character through hell, basically. At university, I really got into The West Wing. And I think that was one of the first times that I realized that TV could look like film. It's a very handsome show, you know. It was the first drama I'd seen that actually looked really handsome.
Mm.
A handsome show.
Which of your contemporaries are you in awe of?
Obviously, I've enjoyed seeing what Jesse Armstrong's done and what him and Sam did previously with Peep Show, which is a fantastic show. My worst sin is that I actually don't watch much scripted TV. I can't separate the process of making it in my head from the process of watching it.
So then if it's a Wednesday and your kids are asleep and you're going to flop on the sofa, what do you do? Like, you just like dick around online, or how do you wind down?
I listen to a lot of music. I'm a musician as well, so I play music, and I'm a big runner, so I do a lot of running.
Oh my God, fuck you. You're telling me that you wind down by going for a run? I was already annoyed when I thought that you're like the person whose brain hasn't been ruined by their iPhone and you can just like sit and listen to music. But I kept my anger to myself, and then I found out you run as well.
Don't get me wrong.
No.
Don't get me wrong. I do my fair share of doom scrolling. But people always say to me, oh, what's your favorite thing on TV right now? And I'm like, Drive to Survive.
So if we're putting you down for a recommendation, is that what we should put you down for then? Drive to Survive?
Yeah, why not?
Wasn't that fascinating?
And you know what I loved, maybe not the most, but a thing I really loved.
I know what it was. It was getting to find out what Idris Elba smells like.
No. But that was good. It was Jim's use of the word handsome.
Mm.
So when we spoke to Lucy Prebble and she described Matthew McFadyen's acting is expensive, and I can feel the word handsome. It's helping me think about things differently already. Like when I watch something and I'm like, oh, I like it because it's handsome.
And I think he really liked my idea about a second series on a cruise ship. It's time to pay someone a visit. Mr. Inbox, are you home?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Inbox.
Hello, everybody.
You sound a little sleepy.
I've just woken up from a long nap.
And how are you feeling?
Medium feeling.
Why only medium, Mr. Inbox?
I wanted 2 more Patreon supporters so my mommy can start saving up for her surgery, please.
All right, I'm done. It gives me sort of a headache.
All right, this first email comes from Sophie Harris, who says, Hi, FNN. The TV stroke movie trope I hate is the cut short phone call. It drives me up the wall when people put the phone down without saying goodbye. No one does that. I am not asking for the very British endless back and forth of byes, but just something.
This is how British people say goodbye. Americans don't know this. And I would see a lot of stand-up about it when I first started doing stand-up. Okay, bye, 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 bye.
Like it's Morse code.
Yeah. Americans don't do that.
I've just thought of a trope that I really don't like.
Go on.
There is a situation in the show where the characters are watching a news item on the TV about themselves. Maybe it's a kidnapping. Maybe it's a case they're involved in. Maybe it's the Roy's watching a story about Waystar Royco.
Uh-huh.
They never watch the end of the item. They just watch the first couple of sentences and then turn it off. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't be watching a thing about yourself and not get to the end.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
We finally got you to criticize Succession. Yes. in the end.
Sophie continues, also, Slow Horses is great. We started watching it because my husband, Phil, loves spy stuff. And I thought, whatevs. But actually, it's brilliant. There's something kind of rompy about it. And it's cloak and daggery in the usual spy ways. But it's also really funny. Plus, the characters speak like normal people. Totally know what Jeff means about being put off by the name. But if it makes any difference to wanting to watch it, the spies are based at an HQ called Slough House, which I think is why they're slow stroke Slough Horses.
Someone here is going to have to watch the Slow Horses at some point. There's been too much of it. Our next email comes from Claire Z, who writes, Dear FC and NC, I need to confess that I've spent all available income lately on Shameless Succession tailgating, but I promise I'll join your Patreon once my credit card hit feels much less ouch. I'm going to see The Effect next week. So are we. Such fucking fans. Look at us having a night out at the theater.
I know. Is there an interval?
Of course. It's written by Lucy Preble. She's not an idiot, Jeff. Oh my God. What if it turns out there isn't an interval?
That would be terrible.
No, she knows what she's doing structurally. Then it's not supposed to have an interval and the whole thing will be like an hour and a half or something.
An acquaintance of mine contacted me via DM on Twitter a while ago to tell me that they were appearing in a West End play. And I replied, oh, is there an interval? And they didn't write back.
Shut up. Really?
Yes. And I'm worried that I offended her.
Well, then that's her fucking problem. Okay. So she's going to see The Effect next week and not so secretly hoping that Lucy Preble would be there. Of course. Okay. I've got tickets to Harriet Walter at the National in December. Happy Hanukkah to me. I'm trying to think if I've got a good Hanukkah song I can sing right now. Oh, this is my all-time favorite.
Is it I Want a Harmonica for Hanukkah?
I know a lot of boys who got electric toys, but I got a harmonica for Hanukkah.
Maybe a West End theatrical impresario will hear you and put you on the stage in a musical.
I think I could get cast in a West End show. I continue to believe this.
I'd come if there was an interval.
That's completely fair. And then, drumroll please, I spent every penny... I think she's good. I think you could spend 3 more pounds on our Patreon, but I respect you. On the extra weekend on call cash on Brian Cox. Woohoo! Opening night, baby. Listen, Claire, I love what you're doing for yourself. She continues, can you imagine how much I would lose my shit if Holy Alexander came to the West End? That would be amazing. That's someone I might show up actually to watch in person.
I thought you were going to say that's something I might show up at the stage door.
No. Do you know what? So this one of the clubs where I am all the time.
Mm. You're talking about in your work, not just hanging out around the clubs with a drink in your hand.
One of the clubs where I'm always dancing. No. One of the comedy clubs where I am at least once a week and probably like twice or three times a week is next door to Garrick Theater in the West End. And so I watch regularly people gathering at the door to get their playbill signed or to get a photograph. And it's just sweet.
But and that could be you if Alexander Skarsgård came to the West End.
Yeah, there are a couple people I would do it for, and Alexander might be one of them. Only because I think it would be very funny to get a photo with him.
Would you say remember me?
With like a Sharpie in my hand.
So you're with all the kind of people who hang around at a stage door, and you're the one going, hey, it's me.
Remember me?
We did a Zoom call.
Anyway, Claire continues, methinks it'd be enough to reverse me old early menopause. Do you feel like we should get Claire together with my mom?
This comes from Mike, who says, hi, if you're not already using it, you might want to consider justwatch.com to help locate where programs are showing. That is incredibly helpful. It's not just Mike who emailed in about this. A few people did. Thank you, Mike. He also says, despite possible chauvinistic pushback, you could also consider adopting the American distinction of seasons and series for clarity. Can I just say I want to do this? And the only reason I don't do it is... because so many of my countrymen have got a chip on the shoulder about Americanisms.
Okay, a few more recommendations this week. We have from Chrissy. She recommended Wolf on BBC iPlayer.
Chrissy, also a big fan of Mr. Inbox.
Fred recommends Fisk. A lot of people have mentioned Fisk.
Yes, I would say that is the show that people are saying we should watch more than any other at the moment.
I feel like it's Slow Horses and Deadlock. Those are the ones where people are like, come on, you guys. Lizzie Pollitt, friend of the pod, recommends Josh. An iPlayer?
Oh, from a few years ago, which I could be wrong, but I think David Schneider had something to do with that. He's a very funny man. It's Josh Widdicombe's sitcom. And from memory, it was a bit Seinfeldish. Certainly an intention.
Sophie Harris, again, we heard from Sophie, but we're separating out some of her straight recs for right here, recommended Love Live. starring Anna Kendrick.
Which you're not going to watch because of your hatred of Anna Kendrick.
My Anna Kendrick hatred means I won't watch anything she does except if she does another Pitch Perfect, which I would, of course, be on board for. And finally, Callum recommends Him and Her.
I love that show so much.
Yeah.
It's the royal family of relationships.
You're looking at me like you're fucking pleased with yourself about that. Is why you should be.
Okay, so this week we like to watch, or actually just you like to watch, Painkiller on Netflix.
60p watchy watchy.
Boys from the Black Stuff on BritBox.
30p
watchy. 30p. I'm gonna be honest, but a cool kid. 50p watchy watchy.
Sarah.
50p, I know, brilliant, but 50p, what you want?
And just like that, HBO, Sky, and Now TV.
100p, what you want?
So, Boys from the Black Stuff is 30p, what you want? Okay.
100p, what you want? Just
wrong
like
with
that,
100p,
what you want?
And Only Murders in the Building on Disney Plus.
70p, what you want?
Jim Field Smith liked to watch Formula One Drive to Survive on
Zero
Netflix.
0p, watchy, watchy.
And Creature Comforts, which I had a bit of a look around for. I will try that website we've been recommended, but I could only find it on YouTube, but it is really good.
0p, watchy, watchy.
0p, you don't know what it is. Just because you haven't heard of something doesn't mean it's 0p, watchy, watchy.
You can't question watchy, watchy. It's just what's in my heart.
Okay,
is that it? Are we done? Is there more?
We're pretty much done. We should mention, actually, that we are going to Edinburgh, but it's not going to be our usual August experience of Edinburgh, where you are having a minor psychological breakdown through performing at the Fringe.
Minor?
I was trying to be kind.
No, it's okay. I know.
But we've been invited to be guests at the Edinburgh Television Festival.
We're very fancy now.
Yeah, I think it's primarily the television industry. I think it's their annual conflab.
Baby, we got industry people listening. Are you going? Are we going to rub our shoulders together with you? We have to plan our outfits.
So we're still a couple of weeks off. I think we won't be going until after next week's episode comes out, but we'll tell you all about it the week after.
It'll be very exciting. Well, I'm very happy to be back in my house. You're a little less happy, but here we are anyways. We'll see you guys. Have a nice week. Go for a dip in a pool somewhere. Do some open water swimming. Why are you laughing? Someone should do open water swimming. It's August. Bye-bye!
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.